Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Market Disruptor Show. Today I am sitting down and joined by Corey Clipston. He is another Bitcoiner. He has got a pretty wide range of background, really, really interesting person, and I can't wait to dive in with him. Corey, welcome to the show.
Mark, thanks for having me on. It's good to meet another SoCal Bitcoiner here on video anyway, and I look forward to hanging out in person at some point.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I love talking Bitcoin. If you've watched any of my shows, you know that already. But Corey, you know, so just for everybody watching, why don't you give us a little bit of a background, just who you are, a couple minutes on who you are and where you've been.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now today, I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Swan Bitcoin, swanbitcoin.com. Going back a few decades, I started out my career working at Microsoft. I was at Morgan Stanley for a little while doing like high net worth client marketing. And that was just before business school. Went to University of Chicago, got an MBA in finance and entrepreneurship there. After that, was at McKinsey & Company, the management consulting company out in their New York office. Did private equity consulting with my own firm out of Chicago for a couple of years before another little stint in management consulting through the downturn, like 08 to 11. It was probably about 2009, 2010 that I really caught the early stage tech bug and really decided I wanted to spend the rest of my career building startups, investing in startups, and being in kind of the startup ecosystem. I was kind of sick of fixing other people's problems and consulting in private equity and cleaning up their messes. And I decided I wanted to make my own mistakes and build things. So I went to Google for 2 years, really just to kind of do B-School part two, the internet version, and learned as much as I could from 2011 to 2013. Met something like 1,500 VCs and founders. I was mentoring startups, organizing tech meetups and things like that out of Chicago and LA. And by summer of 2013, about 6 months after moving my family to Los Angeles, I was confident enough that I could leave Google, jump in with 2 feet, start advising, invest, and looking for startups to help operate. And that's what I've been doing for the last 7 years.
So you've been helping startups operate or get start up, I guess. And then you finally decided to take the plunge and start it up on your own?
Yeah, well, I did take the plunge from late 13 to late 15. I was on the senior team of an ad tech startup that did pretty well and raised a bunch of money, met a bunch of VCs and kind of went through that thing. And I came out of that kind of combining prowess in fundraising, which I've been doing, you know, off and on for 16 years now, and strategy from all the work that I've done in consulting. And basically worked with something like 30 CEOs over the next 4 years on strategy and fundraising, helped raise over $250 million across 20 companies and 30 rounds, and also continued to make angel investments throughout. So built myself a nice little, like a name and some experience, and kind of got my, you know, my master's degree in startups, and got to the point where, you know, I'd been kicking around ideas for a while of something to start, and had some fits and starts of things outside the Bitcoin space, and nothing really, you know, got my attention and passion to the point where this did. And this, you know, Bitcoin grabbed me, never let go. And once I had the idea for what I'm doing in the space now, it grabbed me, never let go. And it's just become a reality because I couldn't do anything else.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. So just for everybody that's watching, we're going to go through a bunch of information. And if you are new to Bitcoin, you probably have a whole bunch of objections in your head. We're going to run through those towards the end. So make sure you stick around for that. But Corey, so it's interesting that, you know, you've been through all these different businesses, the ins and outs of it, inside the belly of the beast, almost, so to speak, right? Like working in the financial system. You'd mentioned like McKinsey, Morgan Stanley. I mean, they're like as deep as you can get, kind of, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was right in the thick of it. I was even spent a lot of that time at McKinsey working in financial institutions group and putting together, you know, financial models for new products for financial firms, things like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I find it interesting because you have like this very deep background in finance, and then you also have a deep background in tech at the same time. So, you know, Bitcoin is a lot of different things, and it's definitely finance and tech, right? So when did you first hear about Bitcoin, and when did you decide to finally get in? I mean, even someone that knows as much as you do, like, tell me how that journey worked out.
Well, this is why I would say, like, if you felt like, you know, you heard about Bitcoin in 2017 or 2018 and didn't get in, or got it, you know, heard about it last year and still didn't get in, it's absolutely not too late. In fact, every day that you wait is only going to hurt you in the future, because the chances are this thing becomes ubiquitous and we all end up pricing goods and services globally in Bitcoin, you know, by 2035. So like the earlier you can start learning about it and understanding it, the better. So that's my first bit of imploring you to take this seriously.
It's kind of like the old proverb, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago, second best time is today.
Exactly. Yeah. So don't feel bad if it didn't take the first time. It's the story of 95% of people that are heavy into Bitcoin today, the Bitcoin founders, even the coders that work on Bitcoin Core, the people that write about it and have podcasts. Like, most of these people missed it the first time around. I was at a tech conference in January 29th of 2014, and somebody had a blockchain wallet and was giving away $50 for everybody that installed a blockchain wallet. And I got my Bitcoin on my blockchain wallet, and I proceeded to not read the white paper, not go down the rabbit hole, and lose the private key.
Oh.
And, you know, and then in December of 2015, I was at a buddy's holiday party up in Santa Barbara, and he knows what I do, and he asked me to help him basically put together like a marketing deck for a Series LLC that had stakes of his that he had in eight different startups. And one of them was Balaji's company, 21E6, which is like an early Bitcoin mining attempt. And another one was Ripple, which is trash, but is a company. But and so I had another opportunity. I was like reading up on Bitcoin over the holidays and putting together these slides for him, and like it still didn't take. I was so busy with other things and other clients and investments and things like that. Like, it just didn't click. It wasn't until — I'm a pretty social animal. I like to organize things. I like to recruit people. I like to throw parties. I like to, you know, just basically like throw conferences. Like, I always am organizing people, and I take my cues a lot more than I probably should from what's going on around me. And it was only the noise of the price run up in Bitcoin and Ethereum, and then all of these people jumping over into ICO projects in spring of 2017 that really caught my attention. And it was only by luck that one of the first, I'll just kindly say, altcoin fund founders, so somebody running a crypto fund, and I guess he liked me and he knew what he was doing with all the ICO crap, insisted that I read Digital Gold first and that I buy some Bitcoin first. So thank goodness for that gentleman, who's another guy here in SoCal, forced me to at least start there. And I think that gave me just enough of like a head start on Bitcoin to make what people call your — am I allowed to use off-color language on this show, Mark?
Sure, go for it.
Okay. Well, a lot of people in Bitcoin refer to a shitcoin horseshoe, which is basically — most people do start in the space in Bitcoin, and then you basically have a shitcoin journey where you're like, go and explore everything else, because why wouldn't you? You're a curious person, and eventually you finish your horseshoe journey and come back to Bitcoin. Thank goodness for this guy getting me started. My shitcoin horseshoe only took about 10 or 11 months, and by then I was actually already working full time in the space. I had taken over as president and chief investment officer of a crypto fund in early 2018. Terrible timing, but by like March or April of that year, I wanted nothing to do with any of the ICOs or the cryptos, and I saw no value in any of them, and I saw Bitcoin as a money that would, you know, trend toward one, and the hardest money ever, and all the things that you talk about in your videos. And so I basically spent about 6 months trying to extricate myself from the situation of having hired a dozen people and having responsibilities and et cetera. And since I left completely by beginning of August or late August of 2018, and basically spent the next 6 months trying to figure out what to do in Bitcoin. I really wanted to do something in this space, and I finally figured it out. And it's the most obvious thing that you could possibly think of.
The new business that you finally decided to jump into is the most obvious thing?
It's the most obvious thing that you could possibly think of to do with Bitcoin.
Yeah, which is selling it.
Sell Bitcoin. Yeah. And it's so funny. And this is like having the wrong mental framework. You know, I got caught up with all these altcoins, thinking that, you know, maybe Bitcoin's MySpace and Facebook is around the corner, or maybe it's like tech and there's all these other things that can kind of do different versions of the same thing. And it's like, no, actually Bitcoin's money and tech enables it. And it's this protocol and there's some other cool things. So it's like a new kind of money. But at the end of the day, it's money. It's the hardest money, the soundest money that's ever existed. And all these other things combined may have a maximum market opportunity of something like two orders of magnitude smaller than Bitcoin. So like, if you take the current crop of all altcoins that exist, Ethereum included, you know, their upside combined is like 1% of what Bitcoin's upside is.
There's so many different ways to look at it. I just made a tweet yesterday that is probably the biggest viral tweet I've ever put out. I can't believe it. And I basically just said — I was just thinking last night, and I was just like, you know what? If Bitcoin never goes up in value, but it keeps my value, keeps my store of value up with inflation, like, I'd be fine with it. And I just tweeted that out. And it was like the biggest viral tweet I've ever put out, it seems like. But the point being, I'm not in it to get to the moon. And so you talk about other alts, like they don't have as much upside. Well, do we really care about the upside? Like, what is it that Bitcoin like, for me anyway, it's kind of like, you know, the features that Bitcoin gives us, being borderless, permissionless, censorship resistant, immutable, that's what makes it special to me. And some people in the US don't care, but if you're in Iran or Venezuela, you probably do care. And so for me, I mean, I would say maybe some alts give you better returns right now. It's like penny stocks. It's like chasing penny stocks, right? But none of them, I guess the argument I get into with crypto alts is, what are the features you're trying to optimize for? So people tell me, oh, but this one's faster. And I'm like,
yeah.
Do people want faster money?
Well, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think we're talking about the same thing on different timeframes and with different strategies and different people. So
sure.
If you're a professional trader and you have a short-term time horizon, and I have a lot of professional trader friends, and I don't begrudge them whatsoever for increasing their net worth by trading cryptos. Like, this is the easiest thing that you could possibly do, to look at these inefficient markets with these pump and dump schemes constantly going out, and like insider information makes you rich. Like, absolutely, by all means,
yeah.
Get on Keybase and Discord and Telegram and call your friends and make a ton of money, or look at your technical analysis. But everybody else that's not a professional trader and hasn't been a professional trader for the last decade or two, you, like all other humans, are going to buy high and sell low, because you're going to find out about it and get excited about it when it's finally starting to go up, and you're going to buy, you know, Compound or whatever at 800, and it's going to go down the next day or whatever. You know, so you just want to be accumulating the thing that's going to be around for a long time. If something in this space is going to work, it's going to be Bitcoin. And that's the only one that has an opportunity to actually be global money out of everything in this space. And really, these arguments are much more of like a 2017 vintage argument. And yeah. Most Bitcoiners that are serious, that spend a lot of time in the space, as I'm sure you know from the people you talk to, but your audience should know this too, they're not actually spending any time talking about alts anymore. Our conversations are about governments. Our conversations about financial infrastructure. Our conversations are about liquidity, privacy technologies, payments technologies. They're about Fidelity. They're about Square. They're about Visa. They're about, you know, about non-KYC Bitcoin, you know, like, how can you buy Bitcoin without having to have it, you know, on the grid, that kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah. And if anyone watching my videos, they know that's all I spend my time talking about. I'm curious. So having been in tech and finance and all these different industries, and now you're building a company in this space. Now you're not building on Bitcoin. You're not building on the code. But you're building a business that revolves around Bitcoin. And I'm curious how that is to build a business with someone that has kind of the experience that you do. So dealing with banks, dealing with, you know, fundraising, if you guys are doing fundraising, and just is there this stigma that's making it difficult to grow a business around Bitcoin, or does it seem pretty easy?
Well, there's obviously a lot more easy money slushing around when you can create your own token. And so that's why you see a lot of these legacy, like 2017, 2018 raises, like still having a lot of money to slosh around. And it's going to take a while for, you know, the market to swallow all of that malinvestment and all the inefficiency. So you have, you know, crap like Cardano and Tron still putting out videos and marketing programs and things like that, because they raised $100 million and have this big treasury or whatever. But at the end of the day, eventually that will get spent and it'll result
in
nothing.
I'm more talking about, like, you know, at the bank. Do they say, oh, sure, you're a Bitcoin business, we can't accept your bank account?
There are enough banks that will work with Bitcoin companies that it's not really an issue anymore. I mean, you've got plenty of partners to choose from at this point.
Okay. So as far as building a business on that revolves around Bitcoin today, a couple years ago it wasn't, but today you feel it's kind of this, not too much different than building any other type of business?
So let's look at it through the lens that I know really well, which is like startups. And so, you know, one of the challenges that you certainly have is in the fundraising arena. And, you know, basically the problem that you have is you're looking for investors that care enough about Bitcoin and know enough about Bitcoin to think that your company is a good bet. But by definition, they know enough about Bitcoin to be judging a startup investment versus their expectations for Bitcoin as an asset.
Right.
So their hurdle rate is basically their expectations of, you know, what they think Bitcoin is going to do over the life of your startup. And so basically that makes it very difficult for most Bitcoin startups to raise money. You know, because of my background and extensive network, it's not been an issue for us. But I do see that problem for a lot of other companies in the space. And that's why I and three friends of mine have gotten together, and we started a fund called Bitcoiner Ventures earlier this year. And basically the goal there is, you know, while the percentage of people who would invest in a Bitcoin startup may be small, the denominator of people that you can pull from should be the largest of any vertical in technology, because there's so many people around the world. So our goal basically is to just aggregate like a few thousand people that might raise their hand and write a small check into a Bitcoin startup and do those through syndicates. And we successfully did a funding for Unchained Capital out of Austin, which does really, really cool stuff in the Bitcoin space, mm-hmm. including Bitcoin-backed loans and multi-sig custody setups and things like that. So we cut our first check for them in May, late May. And we're hoping to do another deal this fall out of Bitcoiner Ventures.
Nice. That's good. Continue to help the ecosystem grow. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious. I want to just dive back in for a second before we move on. So again, you had kind of talked about how, or maybe you told me before we started recording, but you were saying how you got into Bitcoin, but you thought it was just like a tech play. Mm-hmm. And you were buying it, but you didn't really understand what it was. Your eyes hadn't really been opened up. You hadn't been red-pilled, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Like what was your old view that was wrong? And then how did you come to look at it differently?
I mean, I'll just come back to the, the MySpace Facebook analogy is probably the easiest one. Like, you know, you get into something in technology and the first thing you think of is something better going to come along soon and disrupt this. Right. So you may be an investor in Friendster and then you just get your lunch eaten by MySpace.
Yeah.
And you think you have the right one because you're at MySpace, but then Facebook comes along and just like destroys you.
So that's actually probably the, I would say, I mean, at least the top two, objections mm-hmm. that I hear is that, oh, but there's 1,000 other cryptos and exactly what you said, Bitcoin's going to be the old MySpace and mm-hmm. All those. So how do you look at that now?
I'd like let me use this. So there's a lot of arguments for why it can only be Bitcoin, but I'll almost even more easily say why it can't be any other one. Because let's say that some altcoin becomes dominant. Why would you stop there? Let's say it becomes dominant because of some feature and people make the argument and it flippens, as they say, if it flippens Bitcoin,
right.
Why would you stop there? So now it's Ethereum. Well, why not EOS? Why not some other thing? Why not, you know, Cosmos? Why not whatever? You know, like there will always be people. So basically this concept of a shelling point, which is basically where, you know, the second order estimation of what you think other people will think ends up that we all basically think it's the same thing. So it's like, you know, you these things exist where you're like, you know, let's meet in New York tomorrow, but you don't give any other information. Like, where would you meet?
Right.
And, you know, basically the shelling point is Grand Central Station in the Grand Hall at noon, because yeah, that's what most people would think.
Right. So it's like the point there where most people are being concentrated around, which I agree with. But, you know, I think Bitcoin's a little bit different even to that, because like back to the MySpace, Facebook kind of analogy, I can have accounts on both. So like, for example, on Twitter, everyone's moving to like Parler now, but like there's not that many people on Parler yet. And mm-hmm. so like, I don't really want to use it, but I can have an account on both. But with Bitcoin, it's like, you only can really have your money in one place. So it's a little bit different, you know?
Well, you can have investments in other things. Sure. Like you can, I mean, there are a lot of people that own a lot more Bitcoin than I do, and even that may understand Bitcoin better than I do and may still have, you know, some gambles because they have, you know, a bet that like in this cycle, they think this altcoin is going to, you know, be higher beta and will go up more than Bitcoin does. And that's fine. That's like their gambling thing, but it's not your savings.
Right.
It's not your hard money hedge against a financial system that has demonstrated its unbelievable profligacy and lack of restraint over and over and over again, reflating the 2001, you know, dot-com bust with, you know, mortgages and reflating that with the everything bubble and now doing it again with essentially like in gold terms, we're in a depression right now.
Yeah.
Let alone in Bitcoin terms.
I also like to think about it like, is really you have to look at like, what are the important characteristics of Bitcoin? Again, mm-hmm. like I said, right? Borderless, permissionless, censorship resistant, et cetera. For another crypto to come along and beat it at those characteristics. So, okay, it's faster, whatever, right? It's cheaper, whatever. But like in those characteristics that matter, it's like almost impossible. And it was really like Andreas Antopoulos that kind of gave me this argument, but it's like, you know, when Bitcoin started, nobody knew about it. Nobody cared about it. Mm-hmm. The government let it go by, and F.A. Hayek, right? Nobel Peace Prize winner, 1974, he said that there will never be a sound money again until we can take it out of the hands of the government, but it has to be done in a sly roundabout way. That's exactly what Bitcoin did. It was sly. And you know, today we see like all these attacks on networks and then double spending and all that. And so now if anybody really tried to be decentralized like Bitcoin, it would be attacked and it would just be shut down. It would be almost impossible to ever launch that again. Seems like to me anyway.
Well, I think decentralization is actually the key linchpin of that line of thinking, which is absolutely correct. And it's that Bitcoin was able to grow because nobody paid attention to it. It was able to grow 3 or 4 years at the beginning, completely decentralized,
right?
Because everybody was just working on that one. And as soon as people realized, oh my gosh, I can sucker retail investors and VCs into giving me money for my centralized thing, and I can pre-mine it and take 2/3 of it for my treasury, or, you know, set up all these like janky things that fund a foundation and keep me eaten for a bunch of years and buy me mansions and houses and private security forces or whatever it is, that's what people are going to do. And not only that, in a noisy space where now the cat's out of the bag, the ICO bubble's happened, if you have a concept for a crypto, Mimblewimble coin or whatever the heck you want to scam people with, you better have a huge marketing budget, and you better have agencies working in Korea and China and Japan and Georgia and Estonia and the UK and the US,
right,
you know, promoting your crypto like Justin Sun style, or you're going to get your lunch eaten, and you have every incentive to lie about it and to do all kinds of crazy things.
But even that isn't going to save it, because they're never going to achieve the level of decentralization.
That's right. That's why I often talk about the Immaculate Conception.
And right.
Just like, you know, Bitcoin came to be, it was the first one. And the advantages that it has with its beginnings, it has the moral authority that no other coin can have. And it doesn't matter if Satoshi comes back and claims his million coins or sells them or whatever. Like, it actually doesn't matter at this point. He doesn't own shit,
right?
Because nobody owns it, just like nobody owns the internet.
And it's important for me to understand or really even convey that point, because to, like you said, right, to achieve that level of decentralization would be almost impossible today. But the level of decentralization is what allows it to be censorship resistant. And on this last video I just did, I got, you know, 1,200-1,500 comments, like over 1,000 comments, a lot. And the biggest objection, you know, probably 15-20 people at least said, oh, but the government's just going to come and kill it, shut it down or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so being that decentralized, censorship resistant is what's so important. How do you view that?
Yeah. So there's two things at work here. One is the protocol layer. And then the second one is the social layer, which is what humans are going to do and what human incentives have been created, right? So, you know, the protocol doesn't make somebody go and hook up a, you know, a Bitcoin mining facility to hydroelectric power and, you know, bribe a Chinese official to give you that power for free so that you can give hash power to the Bitcoin network. Those are human actions that are being taken because of incentives at the social layer, right? So, you know, the idea that a government could go and shut down the Bitcoin protocol is as ludicrous as like shutting off electricity worldwide. And even then the ledger would survive because it lives on hard disks all over. Like, the Bitcoin ledger doesn't have to be connected to the internet at all times. You could EMP the whole globe. And as soon as you're back online, or as soon as you found another way through smoke signals or whatever to communicate the next block,
right,
you know, you could keep Bitcoin alive. You know, I'm mostly focused on the social layer, and that's really what, you know, the mission of Swan Bitcoin is all about. You know, basically the concept of, in the US specifically, which is where we operate, where I live, where I want to keep living, or at least want to have the option to keep living, I don't want the government to take major actions adverse to the growth and eventual success of Bitcoin.
Right.
I want it to be as smooth as possible for all of us that work in the space, that are early purchasers of Bitcoin and that are holding onto it and helping promote it and helping evangelize and educate people and bring people toward you know, a bright orange future like you are.
Yeah.
So that's our goal, basically, is to get 10 million Bitcoiners defined as someone that, you know, owns some bit of Bitcoin that's meaningful to them and is educated and passionate enough to actually argue for it whether that means, you know, calling a congressman or attending a town hall meeting or writing a blog post or fighting it out on Twitter or whatever it is, that combination of having some skin in the game and enough knowledge to be a little bit dangerous, those 10 million people would be just over the bar of, you know, what Nassim Taleb would call the intransigent minority, that time and time again in a complex system is enough to flip a society to doing things the way that they want it done.
Yeah, like the tipping point.
It's the tipping point. It's the same as regulatory capture. It's so the same halal meat or all of us eating kosher. Just about every packaged food in the U.S. is kosher because, you know, we're fine with eating kosher if you're a non-Jew, but if you're Jewish, you would only eat kosher.
Right.
So we all eat kosher.
And now we see, you know, the no hormones in milk, or now we see gluten-free everything or whatever. Yep. So 10 million users, where do you estimate we are right now?
So that combination of both owning a meaningful bit of Bitcoin and actually understanding a decent bit about it, I think that number is around 100,000 people in the US.
We got a long way to go.
Yeah, I think we got about 100x to go.
You know, Satoshi said it might make sense to get a little bit just in case it catches on. Yeah. And so I recommend that on my video I just did on Bitcoin on a couple of days ago. At the end, I said, look, just put 10 bucks in it. Just put a little skin in the game, because then all of a sudden it's going to attract your interest and you're going to start focusing on more. You're going to start learning about it more. So just get a little bit, 10 bucks. Right.
So you just dialed in on exactly what our value proposition is with Swan Bitcoin. So at swanbitcoin.com, what it is, it's a decision that you make one time, but then it's a recurring purchase. So it's an automatic recurring purchase. So you're constantly just like dollar cost averaging a little bit every week or every month into Bitcoin and learning about it as you go. So that's what we really like about it. As far as we can tell, it looks like a little over half of our users were the first place that they've ever bought Bitcoin. And that's really what it's for. Yes, we're winning tons of people over from Coinbase because our fees are 60 to 80% lower, but also because, you know, it's a great place to experience Bitcoin for the first time. So you can do as little as $5 a month with Swan. And we have the lowest fees in the US for automatic pull from your bank account, automatic purchase of Bitcoin, free automatic withdrawal to self-custody if you're ready for that. If you're not ready, we use the same custodian as like Binance and Bittrex and all these fancy big companies, and custody with us is free as well.
So that's interesting how your model is kind of built around helping people get in and it does like these automatic payments. Now, for people that are a little bit more advanced in investing, know that's dollar cost averaging. And so dollar cost averaging is one of the best ways to get into a position, especially a volatile position. I'm sure you have some numbers and stats around that. You want to kind of dig in and explain how that works?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, at its basic level, if you dollar cost average into an asset, by definition, you're committing the same amount of USD into the purchase each period. So if you buy every week and you're always putting $100 in, when the price of Bitcoin is low, you're always buying a little bit more Bitcoin. When the price of Bitcoin is relatively higher, you're buying a little bit less. So your entry point, you know, over time is always going to be pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You know, but I actually think the much more important thing, and this is why we don't really define the product as DCA, because DCA is kind of like a trading strategy. It's actually much more about the psychological trick of making a decision once and therefore having it happen automatically from then on. Because basically for the last 50 years, call it since 1971 when we went off the gold standard, there have really been only two assets that most Americans have been any good at accumulating value in. One is a 401k because it's automatically taken out of your paycheck. And the other is a mortgage, which is for almost everybody the only way that any Americans for the most part have any value. And that's because you sign up for a mortgage, you sign the contract, you lose your house if you don't make the payment, you usually find a way to make the payment.
Yep.
So those are basically the big buckets of wealth. We think Bitcoin is important enough to do that in the same way, even if it's only like 1% of your monthly earnings or 5% or whatever it is, you should be thinking about building that position in the same way.
Yeah.
Otherwise, 96% of people, I'm so passionate about this, man. But
yeah, go ahead.
They've studied this over and over and over again with people that trade in assets that they, you know, don't really know much about. And this is true for me too. I will always, before this existed, and I don't buy Bitcoin anymore outside of my Swan plan, you're always going to throw down when the price catches your attention. And so 96% of people, it's basically everybody that hasn't had 20 years of conquering their emotions in a market and really knowing the asset they're investing in, 24 out of 25 people, 96%. On average, we'll buy high and sell low.
Yeah, because as humans, we're horrible investors because we run towards pleasure and we run away from pain. And so when the price goes up, we want pleasure, we jump in. And when it goes down, we want to get away from pain, so we get out. We're horrible. I made a video a while ago now. It was, might have been a year ago. And it was, should I buy Bitcoin now or wait? I think was the title of it. And basically the concept of that video was, you know, because I get asked all the time, should I buy Bitcoin now or is it going to drop in the future, right? Like, what's it going to do? And so the title of the video is, should I buy it now or wait? And what the point of the video was, and I demonstrated through math, is that even if you would have bought at the very peak of 2017 at 20,000 or whatever, right? And you would have bought every single week until the bottom, you know, until mid 2018, whenever I did the video, you would have been in profit.
Yeah.
And so instead of trying to time the market, which nobody can do, and so you said it's like a trading strategy. I think it's a long-term accumulation strategy, but either way. But instead of trying to time the market, I don't know if it's going to go up or down. So what I do is I just buy consistently, and then I don't have to worry about it anymore. And so for the average person, as you said, it's the best opportunity, not only because you beat that volatility, so you don't have to worry about it, the fluctuations, but also the point that you brought up is perfect, and I teach this in my investing classes, is it has to be automatic systems. Right.
Yeah.
And so you put both. You give them an automatic way and dollar cost averaging together. I mean, it's a perfect system.
Yeah, it seems. I mean, we have insane devotion from our users, and you know, most of our new users come from referrals. As much as I'd love it to be from appearances on awesome shows like yours, like the majority comes from people that use it and recommend it to their friends. And that's always our North Star. Our goal is to always be the top recommendation of Bitcoiners when their friends ask them, where should they buy?
Yeah. Well, I've definitely been throwing it out quite a bit, and I will continue to. Where are people able to buy from? Is it only in the US or all over the world or what?
Yeah, so it's US only. US only, including Puerto Rico.
Is that going to change sometime soon?
Not this year. There's just so much row to hoe here in the States. And I think, you know, again, with the company's mission being to head off government intervention by recruiting this many Bitcoiners, like any other government coming out against Bitcoin doesn't really matter. It'll just set that little government back. The hegemon, the one with the military and, you know, the global system depending on their currency, cracking down and turning off on-ramps, or, you know, otherwise penalizing Bitcoiners or trying to tax Bitcoiners and give it to boomers as they're spending their retirement money or whatever they're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's what we want to head off. And it's not binary. There's all kinds of things that could be done that we're just going to try to get out in front of and be actively involved in thwarting that would be adversarial to Bitcoin and Bitcoiners.
I mean, it's a great mission statement and I love it. And that's why I do what I do. And we're all on the same page, right? Which is trying to, as you said earlier, like evangelize about it, right? Tell people about it.
Yeah.
Encourage people. Maybe it makes sense just to get a little bit, right?
Yeah. Well, if you want to get your friends involved, and we got to set this up for you, if you're sold on Swan, and I got to get you trying a plan, but you can go to swanbitcoin.com/enlist. And this is basically where you sign up to get your own custom URL and your own custom landing page where your friends can come and see your smiling face and something that you say about Bitcoin and why you think Swan is a good place to buy. We have great people like Max Kaiser and Preston Pish and, you know, hundreds of normal people that are non-media people as well.
Yeah.
Just using that ref link and letting people come and experience Swan on their recommendation. And you can either, you know, pocket those sats, pocket that Bitcoin. We do a quarter point for 3 years for everybody that you bring, or you can donate it. And, you know, if you're not comfortable and you just kind of like want to have people show up, we also have a couple of organizations that we donate to for people that don't want to, you know, earn money from their network and just want to get people using Swan. You can donate to either BTC Pay Server, which is swanbitcoin.com/BTC Pay, spread that around, or Human Rights Foundation, which is Alex Gladstein and their crew doing great work and very, very pro Bitcoin. That's swanbitcoin.com/HRF. And anybody that signs up through those links or any of these ref codes, you know, gets $10 of free Bitcoin when they become a member, which is nice too.
Yeah, I do like both of those nonprofits as you're talking about, Alex and BTC Pay. Both good causes for sure. Definitely both doing, especially what HRH is doing, man. Such good work. And that is exactly why Bitcoin, what HRH is doing, right? It's like, that's why we need.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Human Rights Foundation is always speaking out about, you know, rights of the individual and the importance of separation of money and state, and, you know, really coming out hard against, you know, surveillance technologies and all the spying stuff that's going on with different governments, including our own. So yeah, can't speak more highly of those guys.
Yeah. Cool. So, you gave out the name, was it swanbitcoin.com?
Mm-hmm.
And, cool. Where would people go to find out more about you and follow along on your journey?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, Swan Bitcoin on Twitter is, probably the most active channel that we use, but we also have two shows, that we produce on YouTube and have podcasts. So Swan Signal Live is every Wednesday. You can go youtube.com/swansignal. And in that one, every week we pair, two people to come on and talk about Bitcoin, macro, tech, et cetera. I believe that we're having a guy, this Mark Moss guy, I think is coming on next Wednesday. So if you get this episode up, yeah, if you get this episode up in the next couple of days, Mark, I believe you're on the 15th. So I think it's 11 a.m. Pacific on the 15th, and you can watch live on Twitter or YouTube, or just catch it later on our YouTube channel. And then, you know, you do something that I think is probably more important, frankly, than a lot of the Bitcoin podcasts that I often am on, which is reaching out to people that are in adjacent areas of interest, because you have a broad audience that's interested in finance and you talk to them about Bitcoin. I think you're going to see a lot more of that over time. We're trying an experiment in that. We just started a show called, sounds like a 90s band. It's called Ugly Duckling and the Bright Orange Future. So, yeah. So that one is actually about Gen X music and Bitcoin. And so that's another playlist on youtube.com/swansignal. We just posted our third episode today, but it's me and my real life brother, who's a longtime musician and former local rock star in Seattle with a bunch of musician friends. And, you know, we'll get people like you to come on and talk about a little bit of music, a little bit of like 80s and 90s culture and how it sort of threads through and sets the table for Bitcoin and what's going on today. And then we'll hit a little Bitcoin toward the end of the show.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. You know, you had talked about, you know, your mission at Swan Bitcoin and really to market, to evangelize, get, you know, get people aware of it or whatever. I'm a marketing guy. Always have been. I still am. And I love it. I eat, sleep, and breathe marketing and business and all that stuff. But anyway, it's important to understand, like in marketing, like you have like this customer journey. And so you have to understand where customers are in their journey. And so at the top of the funnel, they're not even aware they have a problem yet. And then they have awareness of a problem, but they don't have a solution. Mm-hmm. Then they have a solution, but they haven't figured out which one's the best one. And then they choose a solution, right? So like, I think exactly kind of what you said with my channel is really about like, people don't even know they have a problem yet. And so it's really mm-hmm. about like, hey, we have a problem here. And then like, hey, here's a potential solution, right? And just trying to work people down that. But I think, anyway, what you said.
I mean, I'm a fan. I've watched a bunch of your videos and I think of your podcast as, it's getting people to think about like, what is money a lot, which I think it's not a coincidence that, you know, probably the last five good Bitcoin books that have come out, you know, the first few chapters are always just about getting people to recognize like, what is money and have you really thought about money?
Right.
And why do we have this unsound money for the first time in human history? Like this is the longest it's lasted. It's we're 100 years into this fiat experiment since the creation of the Fed, the confiscation of gold.
And you know, everybody needs like, the message right now, right? Like, I mean, if so there was ever a time in history, we have people marching, burning cities down, they're pissed off, but like,
yeah.
They don't really understand why. They don't understand why they're so, like, why is there such a divide? Why is there such inequality? Yeah. And it all comes down to the money.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, you can't unsee it once you see it, like the Matrix, right? You also recognize that whether it's happening consciously or subconsciously, and I guarantee for some of these people pulling strings for the fiat system that it's happening consciously, but regardless, the incentive exists to get people that don't have their hands in the honeypot, that aren't close to the money printer, that aren't close to DC and New York and the government financial complex, they don't realize it's in those people's incentive to create strife and get people to fight amongst each other over other issues unrelated to their theft of our savings.
Of course. It's like a magician. Hey, look over here. And then I'm doing this over here, right?
Exactly. Well, so recognize that you're being played, understand money, and you might just find out that Mark has been right this whole time and you should be buying some Bitcoin.
Well, I love your mission statement. I'm on the same mission, and I want to help push it as much as I can, and we'll be aligned up on that. You know, just real quick, you know, for me, I told you, but you know, in 2008, I had made a bunch of money. I was started buying bank-owned repos in Southern California and flipping them and done tons of them and businesses, Fortune 500 exit. But in 2008, I got completely wiped out. And I was like, what the heck? Like, I got to figure this whole system out. And the more I started to learn, the more disillusioned, if you will, I became. Like, this system is just completely screwed. And I saw that what was coming was like, there was going to be this war. And I remember telling my wife, like, I don't want to be a freedom fighter. Like, I'm out. Like, I'll be on a beach in Nicaragua in a hammock surfing and fishing all day. Like, I'm not going to be a freedom fighter. And it was when I found out about Bitcoin, I was like, we finally have a tool we can use. I can support Bitcoin. If I can tell the world about Bitcoin and everybody use Bitcoin, that's how we win. And I don't have to be a freedom fighter. It's a peaceful opt-out. And so it was ever since I recognized that, it was that switch. And so anyway, that's my mission, to tell as many people as I can to become sovereign, become free. And so we're on the same team.
It's exit the system without exiting physically.
But not just exit the system as in like I'm bailing out of the system. Mm-hmm. What we do is we're taking their power away.
We're starving them.
We're starving. And it's because it's fractional reserve, it's exponential, right? So $1 in the bank creates $10 or $100 or $1,000, but $1 out takes hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands out. And so anyway, yeah. So yeah. Cool. Well, we'll keep pushing, and we'll do more content together. And I appreciate you coming on.
No, it's really my pleasure. This was a super fun conversation, and you made 40 some minutes go by real fast.
Yeah. Cool. All right. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good.